Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Week 15 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by MyBookie. As a true football fan, you already know that every weekend your favorite Gridiron Warriors put their skills to the test, so why aren't you doing the same? We are more than three quarters of the way through the NFL season. We're in the fourth quarter now. So now is the time to get off the sidelines and get in the game with MyBookie. MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all your pro and college football action every weekend. They always have the most up-to-date lines and the most prop bets of any sports book on the planet. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and bet with the best at MyBookie. Best part is, if you join now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. That's right. If you put in $1,000, they give you $1,000. That's double your initial deposit that you can use on all your favorite picks. Use the promo code CHAIR to activate the offer. That's promo code CHAIR to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today, where you play, you win, you get paid. My guest today, despite his allegiance, one of my favorite guests. He is the man over at Acme Packing Company for SB Nation, Evan Western. Here to talk to us about Week 15 and this all-important game. Well, more important for the Bears than for the Packers, no doubt. But it's an all-important game in Lambeau on Sunday. It's the Week 15 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. So let's get to it. Down, only three left to go before the 2019 season, or the 2019 regular season, knock on wood, wraps itself up. And the all-important rematch between the Bears and the Packers this Sunday. What's going on, everybody? Larry D. back, the Week 15 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. It's Packer Week, y'all. Looking to avenge that Week 1 performance that was brilliant on one side and about as bad as it could be on the other. And we are not looking for a repeat performance of the bad as it could be on the other side of the football. If we could be, you know, even 50% of what we were on defense, because we were stifling on defense that night, to, if, you know, if we could take that extra percent and give it to the offense so that we could generate, I don't know, 14, 17 points, that seems like it would be enough if we could get another performance like that out of our defense on Sunday. This will be the 200th matchup between the Bears and the Packers. As our guest today, Evan Western from SB Nation's Acme Packing Company. You'll hear him remind me of that at the end of our discussion. Of course, the Bears don't lead the series. We gave that up a few years ago. And hopefully this Sunday will be the first step in getting that lead back, you know, trying to even up the series. I think we're either like two or three games behind on the series. So we need to win tomorrow. We need to win Sunday, and I think we need to sweep to get it back to even, and then we'll take it from there. In 2021, we'll see who's going to battle for supremacy. Wouldn't that be nice? But you know, big game on Sunday, and as I was ominously reminded by one of my listeners this week, that Matt Nagy's record coming off of byes, not so great as during his tenure as head coach. Last year, coming off the bye, we had that stomping of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going to the bye week. Week number six, we lose to the Dolphins on the road. Then the quote-unquote mini bye after we beat Detroit on Thanksgiving. We got 10 days off to get ready for the Giants. Lose that one as well. This year, after we lose to the Raiders, a game we should have won, we come home to a mud hole stomping by the hands of the New Orleans Saints. So 0-3 so far on bye week opportunities for Matt Nagy and this mini bye opportunity on Sunday, 10 days from our victory over the Cowboys. Impressive though it was. We got this big game on the road playing for our playoff lives. Much like the roles were reversed a year ago when Green Bay's slim playoff hopes were on the line coming into Chicago, and it was the NFC North leading Bears that shut the door on Green Bay and ended their officially eliminated the Packers. The Bears wouldn't be officially eliminated if we lose this Sunday, but it would the door would be shut. It just wouldn't be locked, I guess. You know, we've got some minuscule chance still if we lose on Sunday. But, you know, like I said last week, if there's a game we can afford to lose, it would be next week against the Chiefs because that's an AFC matchup. It doesn't affect our conference record and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We need to win this game. We need to win. So if there's going to be a game that breaks our win streak or, you know, stops us from winning out, I would vote for next Sunday against the Chiefs as opposed to, you know, A, getting swept by the Packers and B, taking another NFC loss, which we cannot afford. So that is how I would prefer to look at that if it has to go down that way. Anyway, couple of quick news and notes before we get to our discussion with Evan about this game. And as I've said many times, especially when it comes to our NFC North buddies, despite their allegiances, some of my favorite guests to have on the show, Evan definitely falls into that category, which is funny because when you get this deep into it with the podcasts and, you know, you're showing your loyalty for your squad, the last person you think you're going to connect with is your arch rival. And funny enough, he's actually not a scumbag like most of the Packer fans I've met in my life. So anyway, the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominations came out this year. Every team has a candidate nominated to win the award. Of course, it's kind of like the NFL's humanitarian award. And the Bears representative for this year is Allen Robinson. It was announced, I believe it was today, that he would be the Bears candidate for 2019. Was presented, I think, like a little crystal saying that he had won the Chicago Bears Walter Payton Award by the Payton family, I believe he got. So kudos to Allen Robinson and his humanitarian work and for being a guy that's eligible for this award. So, I mean, I know it's especially important for Chicago Bear players to win the award because Walter Payton was one of us. So that would be outstanding. Speaking of one of us, I want to apologize in advance. This is something I should have done a couple of weeks ago when he first asked me about it. Our good friend Tim Sanchez, he's an OG listener of the show. Has been having some health issues. He's been in the hospital since July. He's one of my most loyal listeners, and I'd love to call him a friend if I ever get a chance to meet him.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
He's out in California. But, you know, somebody that's been a big supporter of the podcast and obviously a big lover of our beloved Chicago Bears. He has a GoFundMe page to help with some of the medical bills and expenses. You know, obviously when you're in the hospital from July up on, you know, till now and whatnot, it's not easy to maintain a job and everything. It's difficult, quite frankly, or impossible, as one would say. But, you know, it's I believe it is still up on the Bears Talk Underground page. We've already raised over $2,900 so far. So thank you to everyone who's donated up to this point. And if you can, it's the holiday season and Tim is one of us. So, you know, every little bit counts. So even if it's $5 or 5 cents or whatever, you know, be sure to go out and help Tim if you can. If not, then, you know, send him some shout outs. And if you're so inclined, prayers, you know, for those of us who are believers. So I just wanted to apologize for not doing that sooner. Matt or Tim, excuse me, came to me before the Thanksgiving holiday, and I just kept forgetting to announce that on the show. So go ahead and help Tim if you can. You could find the link in the Bears Talk Underground page to help out on his GoFundMe. And finally, before we get to our talk with Evan, quick rundown of our injury report. Kind of discouraging to see that Broniker and Gabriel still aren't practicing. Both have not practiced yet with the concussion. Bobby Massey not practicing with his ankle. Not that big a surprise. Roy Robertson Harrison, his foot injury from last Thursday, still not practicing either day this week. Danny Trevathan, interesting situation there. There has been some talk, some rumbling that he could be coming back. He hasn't practiced yet this week, and I think this kind of solidifies the theory that I had, that they don't want to make the same mistake with Trevathan that they made with Akeem Hicks. Like, originally, when we heard about the elbow injury, we heard that it was like a 4 to 6 week injury, and I'm starting to think that we probably could have had Akeem Hicks back maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago based on the readiness and the strength of his elbow, but because he was on IR and had to sit out at least 8 weeks, we probably had to wait, you know, a couple of weeks more than we probably needed to get him out there. So I think the Bears are obviously trying to avoid that because putting him on IR would kill him for the rest of the season, and they just want to try to hold on hope that we can still use Danny before the season is done. So he's still on the injury list, still not practicing with the elbow. Javon Wims is yet to practice this week with his knee injury. The good news is Prince Amukamara, who missed the Dallas game, has been full participation this week. That's the one bright spot on the injury report. And then a weird thing on the injury report today on Thursday, Cordarrelle Patterson with a head injury. Whatever the hell that is. I mean, it's it said he was limited, so it sounds like it happened during practice maybe, like he got hurt in practice. With a head injury. They're not calling it a concussion. Hopefully we get some more clarification of this on Friday when the final injury report comes out and everyone's status for the game comes out. And we'll see what the hell's going on with that head injury. I'm very interested to hear what Matt Nagy has to say about it in the pressers tomorrow about what a head injury actually is, if it's not a concussion or anything like that. So, I mean, because I'm sure if it was like an eye or a nose or something, it would be in there as an eye or a nose injury. Like maybe he got poked in the eye or something like that, but just says head. So, I don't know. Did somebody get pissed at him and go, you know, full on, what's his name, from Garrett, from the Browns, and just bash him over the head with a helmet? Or that would kind of fall under concussion too, though, wouldn't it? Anyway, so that's all we got for the injury report. Looks like we're going to get Prince Amukamara back. The one person who's not on that injury list, Akeem Hicks, and it's pretty much a done deal that he's coming back. He's talking like he's playing on Sunday, And I've been reading articles saying that the Packers are preparing for Akiem Hicks. So it sounds like everybody's in agreement that the big guy is playing on Sunday. And I am hopeful that that has the impact that we're all praying for it to have. You know, it could, it you know, gives Akiem Hicks that, or excuse me, gives Khalil Mack that that guy on the other side that teams have to, you know, they can't double team him because they got to worry about Akiem on the other side, or God forbid, line them up next to each other. Then you got a real problem. You definitely can't double team one when you've got the other one right there in front of you as well. So this is a big deal. Even if Akiem isn't quite 100% as far as being football ready, you know, he can do all the cardio and everything because obviously his legs were healthy these last 8 weeks. But there's that being in shape and then being in football shape. And if maybe he's not in quite 100% football shape just yet, he would make for a decent decoy, you know, for him to go out there and for him to take up some of the space that has been used on Khalil Mack these last 7-8 weeks. He's only had like what, 2, maybe 3 sacks since Akiem Hicks was gone. He had like 4 or 5 when Akiem Hicks was healthy. So I mean, that just shows how important he is to the defense and to helping out Khalil Mack. But maybe he can absorb some of that attention to get Khalil Mack those all-important one-on-ones that he is so desperately needed this year, so he can do his thing. So maybe that is something that, at the very least, Akiem Hicks can provide and help Khalil Mack out with on Sunday. So, but we're going to talk about plenty of that with our good friend Evan Western. Going to bring him in from SB Nation's Acme Packing Company to preview Week 15 between the Bears and the Packers at Lambeau on Sunday. Week 15 has our beloved headed back to Lambeau for the rematch, the revenge game, whatever you want to call it. That's the Bears and the Packers. The rivalry is renewed once again. And to help us preview this all-important matchup, far more important for the Bears than it is for Green Bay. Although, we're kind of in the same spot that we were a year ago, only the roles are reversed. The Packers were clinging on to very slim playoff hopes when they came into Chicago Week 15 a year ago, and it was the Bears that were looking to extend or clamp down on their lead in the NFC North. Now the roles are reversed. It's the Packers that are on top of the division and the Bears that need a win in order to keep their heads above water in the playoff race. And here to help me preview this is our good friend from Acme Packing Company, Evan Western. Evan, welcome back, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. Always a pleasure. And, yeah, it's definitely nice to be on the other side at this point in the season from last year.
I bet it is. I would enjoy trading places with you again and going back to I wish we were 10-3 and not 7-6 fighting for our playoffs live. And it's not so bad that we're 7-6. Really? I mean, that sucks enough. But it also sucks that everybody that we need to pass up is we've played and lost to already. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the part that really – so not only do we have to win out every single game that we have left, we also need a lot of help on top of it. So it's – weren't the Packers in the same spot last year?
Yeah, pretty much. I think coming in last year – well, this was after – McCarthy had been fired.
Right.
So I want to say the Packers were sitting at like 5-7-1 at that point. And yeah, desperately needing a ton of help to find a way into the postseason. And obviously that did not come to pass.
Right. Right. It was enjoyable right up until Eddie Jackson sprained his ankle. Right until Eddie Jackson sprained his ankle on the interception. So bittersweet moment for us Bear fans. Because Eddie Jackson intercepts Aaron Rodgers for what, like only the second time all season, and then goes ahead and sprains his ankle, which keeps him out of the last two games and the playoff game against the Eagles. So, yeah, that sucked a whole lot.
Yeah.
So.
Well, tipped interception, and I think we've talked about it before, but yeah. Rodgers' only two picks this year have also been tipped off of his receiver's hands. So
yeah, because I remember asking you, like, we went back and forth on Twitter about that.
Yep.
Like, when was the last time he was legitimately intercepted? Like, wasn't one that went off a receiver's hands or somebody's head or something, you know, crazy like that? You said last year both interceptions went off Jimmy Graham's hands into a waiting defender's arms.
I'm pretty sure it was the Carolina game in 17 when he tried to come back after the broken collarbone.
That makes sense.
He threw a couple of picks in that game, and in that contest that he definitely probably should not have played in hindsight. So
right,
yeah, it's been 2 years since he threw a pick that didn't hit his receiver in the hands.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the things that makes him so great is that he doesn't make a lot of those "what the hell was that" kind of throws. I mean, even Favre in all of his greatness did that all the time. But you know, Rodgers on the other hand, much smarter with the football, much tougher to intercept, and you know, it's very rare for you to look at a throw like, "what was Rodgers doing there?" You know, you just don't see it.
Yeah, and it's funny because you'll get every once in a while coming out of the woodwork, you'll get the analytics guy who says, well, you know, quarterbacks should be, you know, that a lack of interceptions is actually a negative because it's an indication that they're not being aggressive enough down the field. Hmm. And I think that's first of all, that's ridiculous on its face. And second of all, when you look at the numbers, Rodgers is among the league leaders in throwing into contested and tight windows anyway.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't really work. Yes, he throws a lot of balls away. Yes, he takes a lot of sacks. But saying that he's not aggressive as a quarterback is just patently false.
Right. We as Bear fans know this painfully true. So let's talk about this season. I mean, we won't talk about week one because I still wake up screaming when I think about that game. That was an utter, utter nightmare, that game. I mean, you know, Evan, I've said this a few times on the show throughout the season, but if I told you that the Bears held Aaron Rodgers to 10 points, you rushed for 47 yards and sacked Rodgers 5 times, somehow you still kicked our ass and won the game. And does that make any sense to you?
No, absolutely not. But that was in that first early stretch of the season when the Packers defense looked like it was going to be, you know, reborn out of the ashes of the Phoenix, right?
Sure, yeah.
And since the loss to the Eagles in week four, things have definitely been a little different on that side of the football.
So what changed? Because that was when, you know, looking at the schedule, obviously 3 points for the Bears, 16 apiece to Minnesota and Denver, and then boom, 34 points for Philly at home on top of it. What changed that night? Because it's been 20 points plus more times than not since then.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is the run defense. It kind of starts there. The Packers sit since that little stretch where it was, you know, 20 points rattled off in several straight games. They have trouble stopping teams between the 20s. They have found a way to be really good at red zone defense. I think they're one of the best run red zone defenses in terms of allowing touchdowns in the NFL, but they are the definition of the bend but don't break defense. So you are going to be able to move the ball on this team. There are going to be some lapses in coverage or some open areas that you can exploit, and you're going to be able to run the ball in all likelihood on this team. You know, looking at the rushing yards this team's given up, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games with basically 150 rushing yards or more that this team has given up. And so the key for the Packers is they need to find a way to turn the ball over in those games and get stops in the red zone in order to win the game. Early on in the season, they were doing a great job with that. Now, Chicago didn't run very well, but Minnesota ran for almost 200 yards in week two,
right?
But the Packers forced 4 turnovers.
Right.
So that was the answer. They have lived and died kind of on the turnover and on that red zone defense. And when the turnovers dry up, look at the Eagles' loss. No turnovers, got run on for 175 yards, and they lost the game by a touchdown.
Trust me.
That's the formula for Mike Pettine is pressure the quarterback, force turnovers, don't really care about giving up yards in the running game, and trust that your defense can clamp down if they get in the red zone and take the ball away.
Yeah, trust me, we as Bear fans heard plenty about that game against Philadelphia, because that's, of course, David Montgomery struggling. The Bears were struggling to run the ball, period. But David Montgomery, the guy that we got to replace Jordan Howard, is barely gotten out of the gates, and Jordan Howard runs for like $120 and catches two touchdown passes against the Packers on national TV. So it's like, oh, pace screwed up. Look at this. Jordan Howard, he's thriving, and it's like one game. What has he done since then, quite frankly? I mean, I haven't heard much. I mean, not that I was – it was a kind of a bittersweet moment. We all kind of saw it coming that Jordan Howard was going to get traded, and for him to actually go, it was like, it sucks to see him go. But, I guess the Bears, feel like we need to get somebody who can do more than, be more two-dimensional instead of one-dimensional, which is what Howard was in the offense and everything. And then he had that game against Green Bay of all teams. On national TV, it's like, geez, here we go. So that was an interesting week for that, going back and forth. And Bear fans were already down on Mitch and the way the offense is played and everything. So that was it was just kind of piling on with, one of our cast-offs is thriving against a team that we couldn't do a damn thing against 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I was looking at the numbers for the offense, for the defense. It's middle of the road. It's not like you guys aren't number one in rushing or off. You're kind of like 13th or something like that. You're 20th you're 13th in points and 20th in yards or something like that. So the stats aren't impressive, by any stretch as far as like, or at least characteristic of what you're used to seeing by an Aaron Rodgers led offense. And the defense is kind of the same. Kind of same way, but one place that they are like top five is interception. So I mean, is that where the real difference is being made? Like you're generating the turnovers, you're getting the ball back, even though it's not really statistically working points wise. You guys are up there.
Yep. Yeah. That's exactly it. I mean, it's on both sides of the football. You win the turnover battle. You win in the red zone, and you have a chance at winning a lot of games. So, the Packers have the second fewest turnovers in the NFL and on offense, and they've forced the sixth most on defense. The numbers are the same in terms of red zone. Packers are second in the NFL in turning red zone possessions into touchdowns at 68%. They're sixth against at 50%. So, yeah, it's definitely that. That's the formula. Right. So, again, you can give up yards as long as you give up three instead of six. And that's kind of been the secret on defense and what the offense has made defenses pay. I will say on the offensive side of the ball, they have looked inconsistent, I'll say, is the best description for it in the last few weeks. Not really since that Chiefs game, probably in week eight, have they put together a really kind of complete offensive performance. And part of it to me is that up until this past Sunday against Washington, they hadn't really let Aaron Jones be Aaron Jones. I don't remember how much we had talked about him going into week one. And I don't think he had a great, particularly good game in week one against Chicago, but
nobody did really.
No, yeah.
I mean, not Rodgers. I mean, Valdez Scantling made the big catch that led to the touchdown. But offensively, nobody had a good day, not on the Bears side or Green Bay.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, Aaron Jones, more so even than Rodgers at this point, I think is the driving force behind the Packers offense. If the Packers can feed him the ball and really make a concerted effort to get it to him in creative ways, this offense looks good and it looks consistent, and and they're able to move the ball with some level of consistency. When they don't do that, when they use a little too much Jamal Williams, or when they get away from running Jones, that's when things start to bog down a little bit. And so what I think the key for Matt LaFleur is going to be, especially with no Roquan Smith now, is there's some areas in the middle of the Bears defense that he can target with Jones, both in the running game and in the passing game. And he also creates a big time matchup nightmare for defenses, because when, you know, when he's split out as a wide receiver, he's got receiver like catching skills and ball skills. He's made a few plays on the football that are just ridiculous. I want to say it was the Oakland game. There was just an absolutely absurd wheel route touchdown that he scored. Just a magnificent adjustment to the football in flight that you don't see that kind of play from a running back very often. So he's got that kind of ability. You know, he's a big play waiting to happen, and it's in both phases of the offense, and more so even than Rodgers, he's the guy who the Packers really need to get going to have consistent success on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I heard about him a lot. He was a national story after the Cowboys game, especially after the Chiefs game. It was almost like he single-handedly beat Kansas City, like 200 plus yards of offense and like three touchdowns. Mm-hmm. In that game, I mean, he was a beast against Kansas City. So, I mean, I know that he's probably somebody the Bears have focused on a lot this week, studying up and getting ready for the game. You know, whether or not he's been much of a weapon for them lately, you said he had kind of a renaissance this past week against the Redskins.
Yeah, he'd had a little bit of a tough stretch here after that Kansas City game, and part of it was that they just didn't use him in the passing game really at all for a couple of games, including those two losses at the Chargers and the 49ers. But against Washington, he had almost 200 total yards again. I think it was 130-some on the ground and six catches for like 60 through the air. And they also missed on a would-be 30-plus yard gain where he was wide open down the field for a big play that there was just a little bit of a miscommunication between him and Rodgers on whether he was supposed to break to the inside or the outside. And that could have gone for a 70-yard touchdown too. So yeah, he's beating, you put a linebacker or a safety on him, especially when he's split out wide, and it's probably not going to end up too well for you. But if you put a corner on him, then they can also motion him back into the backfield, and then you're running into a light defense. And it's a challenge for defensive coordinators to handle, especially when they're using him the way they need to in the passing game.
Yeah, so I'm not looking forward to that on Sunday. One thing I am looking forward to is the rusty or not return of Akeem Hicks on Sunday. Apparently he is going to play and help the Bears, I think more than anything, revive Khalil Mack, because that has been one of the more disappointing things about the defense, despite the fact that they're still a top 10 unit, despite the fact that we're still like in the top five in points allowed in the league right now. Leonard Floyd, Aaron Lynch, Isaiah Irving, whoever you put on the opposite side has done nothing to help Khalil Mack. And everyone's talking about how he's having a down year because he's only got 6.5 sacks or whatever. It's like, dude, it's not him. He's definitely being impactful. He's just not being productive like he was a year ago because Leonard Floyd isn't getting to the quarterback. We don't have Akeem Hicks interrupting the middle of the field or Eddie Goldman or anybody. Nobody else is helping Mack, so nobody has to worry about double or triple teaming Mack to keep him out of the game.
Yeah. As I'm looking at it now, through 13 games, he's got, you know, he's just what, five fewer pressures than he did last year.
Yeah.
Mack does, and so he's clearly having the impact. But yeah, having that interior pass rusher to complement your edge rushers is so important, especially in today's NFL. If you can pressure the pocket from the interior, and the Packers have gotten a little bit more of that in the last couple of weeks with Kenny Clark having a better performance, and that's another, you know, he's another guy, not to say he's had a down year, he's been just double teamed a ton on the interior.
He's also been a little banged up too, hadn't he?
He's had a little bit of injuries. He's played every game, and he's played a lot of snaps, so I'm hoping he's not wearing down a little bit. I mean, the guy's only like 23 years old, which is just insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's played a lot, and he has dealt with a couple of nagging injuries, but it seems like since the bye week, he must be feeling a little bit better, because he's been more impactful, and I think he had a 1.5 sacks last week against Washington, and so that was probably his biggest game stat-wise, maybe all season. So if he's, yeah, I mean, he kind of plays that interior disruptor role similar to Hicks does, and like you said, that makes a huge difference for those edge rushers.
Well, especially when they line them up next to each other, because then you can't. Mm-hmm. You can't double Khalil Mack when you've got Akeem Hicks right next to him. So I'm hoping that's something the Bears take advantage with or throw at the Packers early and often in the game, just to see how that combo is going to work again. And also kind of use each other to protect each other. You know, you can't double Akeem if he's right next to Khalil and vice versa. So, you know, you get some one-on-one matchups with those guys and see what kind of impact they can have. And speaking of which, how is the offensive line I've been doing? Because I know that, you know, Bakhtiari is still one of the best. Bulaga is playing well, or, you know, or coming into the season, you weren't 100% sold on the offensive line because you were moving some parts around and whatnot. How have they been doing this year?
Yeah, I think the big question coming in was mainly at the guard positions. With Billy Turner coming in as a free agent at right guard. But for the most part, he has played pretty well. He's not going to be a Pro Bowl player, but he's a solid starter at that spot. Bulaga is his usual steady self at right tackle. He's missed a little bit of time with a couple little injuries. That San Francisco game, he left only about 10 plays in, and that really, really hurt the Packers' ability to pass protect for Rodgers, and that was a big contributor, I think, to the fact that the offense just kind of fell apart in that game. But he's played the last two games. He hasn't missed any snaps, so he should be good to go. I anticipate he'll probably draw a pretty heavy dose of Mac in this game. Honestly, Bakhtiari has been on a down year.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if there's some injuries that he's dealing with a little bit. If maybe he has just hasn't taken to LaFleur's scheme and adjusted to it and picked it up yet, or what it is. But it seems like he's been getting called for holding a lot more than he had in the past. And he last year he got first team All-Pro and absolutely deserved it 100%. And this year, if he gets anything like that, you know, I think that'll be on mainly on reputation, because he hasn't put up that performance. Now, the guy who I think most Packers fans have been the most impressed with has probably been the rookie Elgton Jenkins at left guard, because he stepped in after I think two or three games for Lane Taylor, who went on injured reserve. And Jenkins has basically just been a rock in pass protection. So he and Corey Linsley and Billy Turner, I mean, those guys are obviously going to be tasked with containing Hicks and the Bears interior guys. But Jenkins has been awesome as a pass protector, and he's been everything the Packers could have hoped for from a second round pick. So there's finally a little bit of youth again on this line, with him and Turner being in his fifth year. So he's a reasonably young guy. We'll see what happens to Bulaga after the season, because his contract is up. He's 31, I think. And, you know, he's had issues on both knees, both ACL and MCL in both knees over the years. And I just wonder if the Packers are going to be willing to give him a third contract, or if they're going to, you know, look for another option. So, but yeah, it's been, I think a lot of the pass protection issues are probably scheme related in terms of learning LaFleur's offense a little bit. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Rodgers has the tendency to hold onto the ball a long time, which for a 36-year-old quarterback, probably not the best plan. But he's still athletic enough to make some interesting things happen and escape from the pass rush. So so that has helped. It's made the offensive line honestly look both good and bad at times, depending on how he performs on a particular play when he extends plays like that.
Yeah, I mean, we got to him five times and we hit him a lot more than that in that first game. As well, I mean, it just I mean, that game was so bittersweet. I mean, for obviously for Bear fans, because our defense not only seemed to, I mean, all we heard about all summer long was this defense regress, and they were even better than they were, you know, the last year, with the way they just flat out just, you know, we gave up 10 points, 47 yards rushing, sacked Rodgers five times, and we lost the game. I still can't believe it. But one of those things was, you know, you got Leonard Floyd, who his outside linebacker coach is talking about, this guy's got moves. He's got the tools to be special, or blah, 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 high ceiling, all that. He bull rushes Bakhtiari into a sack onto Rodgers, like, dude, we might actually have something here with Floyd. Yeah. I mean, this guy wants to get paid, you know, he wants to, you know, wants to get Khalil Mack money, kind of thing. And we didn't hear from him for about 6 weeks after that. You know, those two sacks that he got on Bakhtiari in that first game were the only two he had until about 3 weeks ago. He finally tacked on a third. He's, you know, it was just, you know, one of those things that just, like, you know, has that been a thing? Like, you know, you think it might be a, like, an injury thing with Bakhtiari, because he's, I mean, obviously, yeah, he's like 60 pounds heavier than Leonard Floyd, but he got underneath Bakhtiari and shoved him right into Rodgers, no problem.
Yep. Yeah, I do think injuries have played a part, and he hasn't really showed up in the injury report at all season long, but there's just something visibly just a little different about him as you watch the tape on him. He looks maybe a little slower to set his feet and anchor in pass blocking. And I'm just not sure, you know, what that can be attributed to, if there's some back stuff going on, or if it's knees or what it is. So, yeah, it's a bit of a concern, certainly against a team with pass rushers, with the level of talent that the Bears guys have. I mean, obviously, again, Mac is going to be Mac, and he's going to be difficult for anybody to handle. But like you mentioned, I mean, Floyd had that great game in week one. So it'll be really interesting to see how this goes, because top tier pass rushers have been a problem for the Packers this year. I mean, if I never see the Packers play against another Bosa brother again, it'll be too soon, because both of them just absolutely wrecked the Packers offensive line in those Chargers and 49ers games. So it was a nightmare dealing with both of those two guys. And I say that as a Wisconsin fan living in Columbus, Ohio,
yeah,
you know, amidst Ohio State fans. So I have to deal with all of that added added frustration and ribbing that I get from all, you know, all the people around me. So that's no fun. But yeah, it's teams with top pass rushes, you know, have really slowed down the Packers offense and stymied them. And I think the key is going to be, you know, when and teams that don't, you know, the Packers have moved the ball. So
sure. The
key is, you know, it always comes down to the trenches. And I think in this game, it's going to be, you know, it very well could be decided based on the Bears defensive front against the Packers offensive line.
Right. And that's what I wanted to ask you, was with the way that, I mean, we're talking a little bit before we started recording about how the teams that win a lot of one-score games, or winning ugly, or whatever you want to call them. But both of your last two losses against, I was going to say San Diego again, God damn it, the Chargers and the 49ers were tantamount blowout losses. I mean, the 49er game definitely was, but 26-11 against the Chargers,
it wasn't that close. That touchdown came in garbage time, so okay. It was a 26-3 game in the early in the fourth quarter.
Right. So what was the difference in those games? I mean, was it the Bosa brothers doing their thing, or what? You know, did you guys turn the football over in those games? What was the difference that made it such a wide margin in those losses?
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation among Packers fans that, because both of those games were on the road out in California, and that there was something fishy going on with the team's like travel schedule, or especially the Chargers game, that there was some talk between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers that guys like weren't taking the road trip seriously, or weren't taking care of themselves. And so that led to a whole bunch of speculation about, oh, well, maybe the young guys got caught up in the LA nightlife or something, you know, that weekend. And so that's been one of the storylines, is, well, let's just not ever have to travel out to California again. But I mean, beyond that, it was you know, a big part of that was the pass rush, really stifling the Packers offense. And one of the things that the Packers have done this year is most of the games that they have won, they have started out hot on offense. It seems like Matt LaFleur has scripted those first 15 to 20 plays really, really well all season long. And once he gets out of that, things start to get a little more clunky from a play calling perspective. So in both of those games, things got off schedule real early, and the pass rush was a big part of that. Against the Chargers, there were a couple of big sacks early. They got out, you know, into a couple third and longs, and everything just kind of fell apart. Against San Francisco, the first two, three plays were great. Then there was a weird penalty on Davante Adams for chest bumping a corner after he made a big gain or something. It was a ridiculous flag. The kind of thing that maybe you'd think you might see in college, but certainly not in the NFL. And that set the Packers back 15 yards. And then the next play, Rodgers is under duress and gets sacked and fumbles, and the 49ers take over on the 2-yard line and score a touchdown right away on the first play.
Ouch.
So you've got, early adversity that just did not, put the team in a good position. And I think everything kind of fell apart from there. So that's, I think, one of the ways to get to Green Bay is if you can, get them out of their comfort zone early on in the first quarter, especially on offense. If you can get to Rodgers and get them into third and longs, then they kind of have to get out of that script a little bit. But when they're able to move the football consistently early on and stick to LaFleur's script, things have gone really well. I mean, even last week against Washington, they scored touchdowns on two of their first three drives. And that was, you know, the only two times they found the end zone in that entire game, and they ended up having to hold on for an ugly 20-15 win. So it's going to be really important for Green Bay to get on the board early, get some confidence moving, get the start setting up some of their play calls for later in the game with some success early on in those first probably 15 to 20 snaps.
This episode of the podcast is also brought to you by our friends at Blue Chew. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go. Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence where it counts, so listen up. BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color, brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, everybody's favorite bathtub pill. So you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready when the opportunity arises. If you could benefit from extra function and more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for all our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the promo code ARMCHAIR. Just pay $5 shipping. Once again, that's BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, promo code ARMCHAIR to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Now let's get back to the show. Boy, that sounded painfully familiar to a team that I watched week in and week out last year. You know, Nagy and his offense were awesome in the first 15 scripted plays, and then things got testy in the second and third quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, basically they tell Mitch to go out there and just kind of do his thing. And that's been the thing with Trubisky, is that basically when he's out there running the two-minute drill or the hurry-up offense or whatever, and he's just got to shut his brain off and play football, the guy's unbelievable. But you go out there and you got him thinking and reading and things like that, things that quarterbacks should be able to do, he has struggled. Not so much the last few games. He's been a lot better the last few weeks. And we'll see how that translates against a decent defense in the Packers on Sunday. But, you know, that's how the Bears lost to the Giants last year, was that second play of the game, Chase Daniel throws an interception to Ogletree, where the ball basically just stuck to him. He runs it in from 7 yards out for a touchdown. Before you can even blink, the Bears are down 7-0. And it was a game like that where things just did not go our way, and we were clawing to fight our way back into the game, couldn't quite pull it off. Same thing with the Dolphins. We got behind early. We had to go back and forth with them and end up losing that one in overtime as well. That's how the Bears lost their games last year. Sounds like that's, you know, pretty much what's going on with the Chargers, or the Chargers, the Packers, is that you get them out of that, you knock them off that 15 play script where they, you know, they've, this is the 15 plays we've been running all week long and we know what we're doing here, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, wait, we're down 10 nothing already. Well, we got to do this then. And to kind of catch up, that's where you guys get rattled a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that's probably a symptom to some extent of having a young head coach, somebody without a whole lot of head coaching experience. And in LaFleur's case, without a whole lot of play calling experience too. I mean, he only called the plays for 1 year in Tennessee before getting the job in Green Bay. So I think he's still figuring out who he is as a play caller. He's got some really great designs and schemes and things to get guys open in the passing game, especially, and the running game has been pretty effective at times this year, but it's maintaining the consistency throughout a game, throughout a couple of games, that has really been the Packers' struggle. And it's why that, you know, Packers fans feel like at this point the Packers could beat anybody but could lose to anybody.
Sure.
You know, you feel like you're not really 100% confident to, you know, as to which version of this offense is going to show up. And I mentioned this in a piece on Acme Packing Company today when we were talking about, well, what do the Packers need to do to be able to get to the playoffs and win games? And one of the things that has been a problem has been hitting on some big plays when you have the opportunities. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that Jones pass. It was a little detail, like Jones, you know, released to the inside of the cornerback instead of the outside, and that made the, Rodgers threw to the outside, and the ball fell incomplete for what should have been, you know, probably a 50, 60-yard gain. It's little things like that that you have to take advantage of when you get into games against really good teams and these one-score games, these close games, and especially in the postseason. You've got to hit on those opportunities because you might only get one or two of those a game. You're not going to get, you know, three or four like we have against the Giants and Washington.
Right.
So that's been the difference, I think, between, you know, the way that they looked against Oakland when they scored 42 points and they put up 500 yards, and how they looked against Kansas City when Jones had that amazing day, versus, you know, how they looked against Washington, you know, putting up, you know, 300 some yards or so, but not really looking consistent and only, you know, only getting 20 points. So the hitting on those big plays, you know, LaFleur has done a great job of creating them and giving Rodgers the open receivers through scheme, which is what Packers fans desperately wanted after getting rid of Mike McCarthy and his ISO routes and slant flat and everything for years. We've got an offensive play caller who is willing to scheme guys open, and now it's a matter of executing on the details and actually making those big plays happen. And if and when that happens, I think this offense is going to be, you know, nigh on unstoppable, even with, you know, acknowledging that they may not have a real deep roster of playmakers on the offense. But yeah, that's the difference between a team that, you know, maybe they win the division and they, you know, they go out in the first round versus the team that can make a Super Bowl run is executing those big plays and getting those details all nailed down.
Yeah, I mean, again, it sounds familiar to what the Bears were going through a year ago. It was like, you know, we had that defense that was, you know, elite, and everyone was afraid of it, but no one was afraid of what we were doing on offense. Even though we were better than we had been in a couple of years, we still weren't scaring anyone. So like you said, we could beat anybody because of our defense. We could also lose to anybody because we couldn't outscore a lot of plays.
Yep.
Or a lot of teams, I should say. And with the way that the Saints and the 49ers especially are playing right now, the Packers are kind of an afterthought in the NFC playoff picture right now, because you're a wild card team right now, because you're going to have to play that extra round, and you're going to have to go to either New Orleans or San Francisco to do it.
I'm going to stop you right there, because the Packers are in the two spot right now.
Are they?
Because they are, because New Orleans lost to San Francisco last week. That pulled them back down into a tie with Green Bay, and the Packers have the better conference record. So Green Bay's sitting in the two.
Okay.
They went out. They're getting that first round bye, and they would get potentially a Saints team in Green Bay in the divisional round, which,
okay,
yes, give me that matchup, you know, in the snow, Give me Drew Brees trying to throw in the elements in Green Bay, as opposed to, you know, I know Aaron Rodgers has been great in domes, but that's a heck of an equalizer, and I think the Packers are better suited to play that kind of game in the elements this year.
Right. Right. But despite that, being the number two seed, nobody's really talking about Green Bay being one of those teams that's going to make a run. Same thing with going with the Bears. Like, the potential is there. You guys have Aaron Rodgers. He's the Super Bowl MVP, been there, done that. You guys can absolutely make the run. But you got San Francisco, you got New Orleans. Hell, you even got Seattle out there that, you know, talking more about them than they are about Green Bay right now. The NFC is a gauntlet again this year. And, of course, the Patriots and the Chiefs are going to skirt on by in the AFC like they always do. But, you know, in the NFC, it's a very top-heavy conference right now. And, you know, as well as the Packers are playing, you know, they're kind of an afterthought with the other teams and the way that they're playing right now.
No, I completely agree. I think it's, and part of that is probably the way they've played in these last couple games. They beat the Giants by 18, but they didn't look particularly impressive doing it.
Right.
You know, they skated by Washington in a 5-point game. And so again, it's been 6 weeks since they really put together a really solid performance. So they need to show that a little bit. As they run the gauntlet through, you know, the three teams in the NFC North to close out the regular season.
Yeah, that is the schedule, isn't it? You got Chicago this weekend, Minnesota, and then Detroit to polish it off. And you know, let's talk, Evan, like we have been for the last 45 minutes. But tell me, as a Packer fan, and trust me, this year, I have absolutely heard it all, so you can't hurt my feelings. How do you guys feel about the Bears coming into town this weekend? I mean, is there a raised eyebrow after what they did to the Cowboys last Thursday? Or is it like, the Cowboys are actually not as good? You know, the eighth-ranked defense, those guys aren't the eighth-ranked defense in the NFL. Or, you know, they beat the Lions twice, the Giants, and a lousy, you know, and a down year Cowboys team to win four of our last five games. Or is it, well, Mitch is actually looking like a professional-level quarterback in the last few games, despite, like, he couldn't lead a Pop Warner offense week one against you guys. What are the thoughts? I mean, not just yours, but everyone in Acme Packing Company. I know you guys have been talking this week, so what's the word around the water cooler?
Yeah, it's a very different feeling than it was, let's say, 3 weeks ago when the Bears were sitting at 4-6. It at that point it was okay. Let's see what happens in the San Francisco game, and then we've got three easy games before our next big one against Minnesota, being the Giants, Washington, and the Bears.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody feels that way anymore.
Right.
There's definitely some apprehension. There's there's plenty of caution among Packers fans the way that the Bears have played these last 3 weeks. And I wouldn't say that Trubisky is necessarily the reason for a whole lot of that. I think that the general feeling among Packers fans is that Trubisky is well, I'll say that most Packers fans think he's trash.
Sure.
I wouldn't go that far. I think that's the prevailing opinion. And so it's going to be can we stop the run? Can we stop Allen Robinson from doing good things more so than can we avoid having Trubisky beat us? I think the game plan is still going to be what it was in week one, which is see if you can control the run and make Trubisky play quarterback, the old kind of Jay Cutler method.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
And you figure there's going to be some opportunities where he's going to make mistakes and you got to capitalize on them. And that's what happened in week one. So it's the apprehension is, I think, on both sides. It's the Packers haven't looked complete in a month and a half. The Bears have definitely looked like they're showing signs of improvement. And this is by no means being looked at as a gimme game anymore like it was probably 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that a lot of Bear fans kind of feel that way as well, you know, because at 4-6, We look back. Number one, we should have had at least two more wins. We should have been 6-4, not 4-6. But we had four wins, and we only really had one that you could actually feel good about. And that was that win over Minnesota. And even that's kind of got a an asterisk to it, because Mitch went down fifth play of the game, and it was Chase Daniel that won us that game. So even the game where our defense was out of this world and shut down Dalvin Cook, who was the best back in football going into that game, he made it look like we broke Kirk Cousins in that game. Like, they just looked so inept, could not do anything. And, you know, we only needed 16 points to win that game. And 16-6 doesn't even tell the story of how dominant the Bears were in that game. But it's like, you know, obviously we lose that game to you guys. We go out to Denver. We win because the referees give us give us that get back call on the roughing the passer. We did not deserve that call, but we got it because the ref screwed us twice earlier in the game on calls just like that. So they gave us one back. Hell of a time for them to do it, but we'll take it. Then Pinero kicks the field goal. Then we go out there and we dominate the Redskins only until the fourth quarter, when Keenum leads two touchdown drives, and all of a sudden it's a ball game before we finally get the ball back from him and everything. Like, okay, we had to hold on against the Redskins, who were the worst team in football at the time. And, you know, then we polish it off with that win over Minnesota. Then our next two wins against the Giants and the Packers, or excuse me, the Lions, I'm sorry, against the Lions and the Giants. I'm prophesizing for Sunday. Both of those games we had in hand going into the fourth quarter, and then we take our foot off the gas, or we just had no killer instinct. And in both games, the Lions and the Giants scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter to make it a ball game. Now all of a sudden we got a game on our hands when going into the fourth quarter. We should have been looking about how can we end this game and put it down. So it's like we got, you know, four or five wins on the ledger. We can't feel good about any of them. And then we finally have this game against Dallas where it's like Mitch outplays Dak Prescott. You know, Montgomery is you know, running around all over the place. Allen Robinson is catching things. We're executing on offense like we hadn't all season. I made the comment, it's like, I don't want to sound like a dick about this, but we actually looked like we practiced this week, and that we watched film on our opponent because we look prepared, we're executing, you know. It's like, this is outstanding. I was like, we're peaking, you know. It's about time that we looked like a competent offense. And 31-24 does not tell the story of how the Bears won that game as well. The game was not that close. So we're going into this game against Green Bay feeling a lot more optimistic than we would have, say, if this game was taking place week 11 as opposed to week 15.
Yep. Yeah, and looking at the numbers from that Dallas game, I will say if the Packers force are plus two on turnovers and pick up 400 yards, which is what Dallas did, I would be shocked if Chicago wins this game. Because, again, we talked about it. The Packers have given up yards, but they, you know, when they force turnovers and get stops in the red zone, they win football games. So the stats definitely kind of are lying in that one in terms of, how well the Bears did play in that game.
Yeah.
You wouldn't necessarily think that was a solid win. Just looking at the stats, cause with Dallas outgaining and being plus two. So, it's just, you know, it's interesting. And you mentioned that Denver game too. And, you know, and something you mentioned earlier is about those one score games. That game, some of the other ones, the Raiders game. I mean, those show you how weird some of those one score games go. And it's one weird break here and there that, that kind of decides.
Oh, dude. That
the result. Or look at the Chargers this year. I mean, how many games have they had that have just been ridiculous circumstances that
all
Tennessee
of them apparently in. To listen to the announcers talk about it, every game that they've lost this year has been a one score loss, and they keep reinventing ways to have that one score come away. And that Oakland game against the Raiders, you're absolutely right about how funny things break and go a different way. We got called for running into the kicker on 4th-and-6, it gives them 5 yards. They go for it on 4th-and-1, and they get it. Now, initially, they thought they fumbled it, but that call goes against the Bears. Oh, no, he was down by contact. First down, Oakland, and that's what put them on the 97-yard drive for the touchdown. Otherwise, they were punting. We were getting the ball back with like 4.5 minutes to go. Instead, they use up almost all of that to score the game-winning touchdown, and that's what put that away. But, I mean, this weird running into the kicker call where the guy was shoved in the back and kind of sort of, you know, it's like almost like the punter sat down on top of him, not that his legs right. were taken out from under him. It's like, that's not a penalty. That is not a penalty. Yeah. You know, 9 times out of 10, they don't call that, but here they did, and that's how it unfolded. So, I mean, the defense still had to stop them from going like 80 additional yards, but that was the break that they needed in order to be able to pull that off. And those one-score games, like you said, it usually comes down to like one or two plays that tell the tale of how that game's going to unfold.
Right. Yeah, and those generally, you know, in my experience, and guys have looked into this and found it, those generally tend to eventually break even over time. So
yeah.
If you've got a team that ends up being really good in those one-score games or having a good record in one-score games 1 year, that tends to be to put them as a candidate to regress the following year. And I think, you know, that was a little bit of the Bears this year.
Sure.
from last season. And I think you're seeing it with the Cowboys too. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it. Justice Mosqueda, he's a Packers guy on Twitter. He does a bunch of NFL writing. He's the one who kind of breaks this down. And he looked at the Rams and the Cowboys as the big candidates for big time regression this year based on their record in one score games last year. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look at both of them. The Rams are scratching and clawing to try to find their way into a playoff spot.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Cowboys are sitting in the lead in the NFC East, but you know, sitting at 6-7, and you know, their only reason they're in playoff position is because their entire division is garbage. So,
yeah.
I mean, it tends to bear itself out. And I will say that leaves me a little bit of pause for, you know, the Packers next year, because they have been in a lot of these one score games, and most of them they have come out on the winning side of. So
yeah,
they're gonna need to figure out a way to win by win by two scores on a consistent basis if they want to sustain the success that they've had so far this season, you know, in through the rest of the year. And then, you know, into next season as well.
A couple more things before I let you go. One game in particular that I wanted to ask you about. Lions fans are still pissed off about it. Is that Monday?
That one was going to come up. Yeah,
that Monday night game. And, you know, as a Bear fan, I can objectively say that we got a call we didn't deserve in that Broncos game that helped us extend, you know, get yards we didn't earn to set up that game-winning field goal to get that win over the Broncos. How are you and how are Packer fans feeling in general about those hands-in-the-face penalties where it's up in his shoulder blades, it's not under his chin, or, you know, whatever it was? To tell you the truth, I didn't catch the end of it. I fell asleep. So I didn't see it happen live, but it's all I heard about the next day was how the Lions got screwed. The refs did that. How can the refs do this? And blah, 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 blah. How are you guys feeling? I mean, I know you were enjoying it in the moment, but when you go back and look at it, did you get lucky or did the refs make the right call?
Yeah, it's one of those calls where you can see why the ref made the call, mm-hmm. because it looked bad. Flowers had his hands up around Bakhtiari's neck, and it was up. You know, he was kind of shoving him up under the neck, but he didn't actually have his hands around the face mask or around the helmet or anything. So it looks bad. It probably isn't technically hands to the face, but at least I would imagine that an impartial observer could see why the referee would think that was the appropriate call in the moment.
Well, especially now, in live full speed, it could be
exactly
tough to say.
Right. Yeah. But here's the thing with that one is especially the second call, the one on the last drive, it's 3rd and 4. Rodgers throws an incomplete pass. There's 1:45 left. The thing with that one is there's 1:45 left. The Packers are on the 16-yard line. At that point, Mason Crosby's kicking a field goal to put the Packers up anyway. And so the Lions are still going to need to take the kickoff, drive down and kick a field goal to win that game. And their offense was not good in the second half of that game. Looking at it here, they kicked three field goals in the second half, but I think all of them came in pretty good field position. The third one, they didn't even move the ball at all. They got the ball at like the 40-yard line or something, and Prater kicked one from 54 or something. So they did not move the ball with any consistency in the second half. So, you know, we're complaining about that. You know, they're complaining about that one, giving the Packers the chance to run the clock down and kick the winning field goal. Okay, but the alternative scenario there is, in all likelihood, especially with how good Crosby has been this year, he kicks that field goal. There's a minute 30 left. You still have to go down the field with, you know, maybe one timeout, something like that, and try to score against a Packers defense that was playing really well. So that's one of those where I don't think it cost the Lions the game like a lot of Lions fans seem to suggest that it did. It made it easier for the Packers to clinch the win in that game.
Yeah.
But I don't think by any means that it handed them a win that they wouldn't have otherwise gotten.
Yeah. I mean, I just look at that and they were pretty hot at the moment. You know, they, even though they had lost the week before to Kansas City, they gave the Chiefs all they could handle before the Chiefs finally won that game. They have the bye week. They come in. They start hot against you guys and, you know, look like they were ready to take a step. And, you know, that game was kind of the beginning of the end for them. They're like 1-7 since that game took place. Or whatever. So I know that there's probably Lions fans out there saying that that's where it all went wrong. Was like after we lost that game, our confidence was zapped, or, you know, it was all about the bad luck from there. We've been garbage. The only team we've beaten since then is the stinking Giants. So that's been the tail of the tape for the Lions this year. Not that they're actually a bad football team, but that's how they feel. Anyway, I'm sure. But you know, it was interesting. You know, you know, I was like, I wake up and SportsCenter is on and Booger McFarland's complaining about the who has been terrible in Monday Night Football. Jesus Christ. They got to do something about the Monday Night booth. It is awful. But anyway.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that one for Packers-Vikings in Week 16. We have to put up with that again for that game, especially because that's going to be one of the premier games in Week 16 next week. So.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Good luck. We only played one Monday night game this year. Thank God.
Yeah, no kidding.
And it was week three. We got it out of the way. Just gone.
There you go.
But, you know, hearing about that and Booger McFarland and Ryan Clark are complaining about the referees and how the refs won this game for you guys or opened the door and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it was just that's kind of been the story of the entire season about the refs winning games for teams and, you know, how can they make that call and blah, blah, blah. And all the rest of that, apparently they're going to be looking at the referees when the season is over. So,
yeah, we'll see what comes of that.
But anyway, what are you thinking for Sunday? How are you feeling about it? Are you thinking, you know, low scoring and ugly? I hope to God it's not another 10-3 ball game. That would make me insane. I mean, as awesome as it was to watch our defenses do their thing, for both teams to look the way they did on offense made that game hard to sit through, even though it's the one game we've all been waiting for all this time. I hope to God it's not another game like that.
Yeah, and I suspect that it won't be. I mean, the Packers offense has generally functioned better at home. This goes back years. But for the most part, it's been a better unit at home than on the road. And I think that's probably going to be the case this week. I'm excited to see hopefully how Aaron Jones does get matched up. Like I mentioned earlier in the passing game, seems like LaFleur is really getting back to that using of him as a weapon again. So that's a matchup problem. And, the Packers defense looks like they've found some juice again these last 2 weeks. They've, I think they sacked Dwayne Haskins 5 or 6 times last week, and Daniel Jones, you know, I don't think they actually sacked him, but they pressured him constantly 2 weeks ago against the Giants. So Za'Darius Smith is a beast. And if there's any NFL fans out there who don't know his name yet, they have not been paying attention, because he looks like one of the best edge rushers in the league right now. And you mentioned lining up a guy next to an interior rusher, you know, putting Mac next to Hicks or something.
Right.
The Packers do that a lot with Smith. They'll line him up with his hand on the ground on third downs. They'll line him up over the A gap. They kind of play him all over the place, kind of the way the Packers used to do with Clay Matthews a little bit when he was still around. So he's going to be rushing from all over the place. And then you got Preston, the other Smith brother, who's, you know, plays that just steady, consistent outside linebacker spot, and has had some really good games rushing the passer too. So I think the Packers will get to Trubisky. The question is, you know, how much damage can Chicago do in the run game? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where there's some weaknesses in Green Bay's defense, because they play so much light personnel with nickel and dime packages and things. Really don't have a second inside linebacker, and haven't for years next to Blake Martinez. But yeah, if you're asking overall, I'm thinking kind of, you know, game in the teens to low 20s. I mean, something in the probably 24-17, you know, 21-16 kind of range. That sounds about right to me for this game. Fairly close, but yeah, that's where I'm coming down.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus. That's what I've heard in other podcasts. You know, where it's like this. There's a Packer guy and a Bear guy talking about it, and you know, for me, it always comes down to two questions. Can the Bears win this game? And the answer for me is always yes. Yes, they can. It's the NFL. We have a talented squad. We have a good defense. You know, we only needed to score 11 points to win the game the first time around. So, you know, we don't need Trubisky to go out there and score 40 in order to win this game. It would be nice if he did, but we don't need him to do that to win this game. But then comes the more important question. Will they win the game? When it comes to the Packers, the answer is no until we actually do it. You know what I mean? With all the time, with all the years and the struggle that we've had with Green Bay, we should have won both games last year. We only won the one in Soldier Field last year. You know, we can argue all day long about how week one should have gone with the way our defense played. Just, it was such a wasted effort from our defense to do what they did and still come away with the loss in that one. You know, I'd be inclined to pick the Packers to win. I absolutely believe the Bears can win, but if it comes down like gun to my head, will they win on Sunday? I don't think so. I do like the 21-16 final score. That sounds about right, or maybe something with more field goals in it, more like a 23 yep. to 23 to 17, 23 to 19, you know, kind of thing. You know, like you said, with the red zone, like the Bears will get in the red zone, they just won't be able to close the deal. So Pinero's yep. going to be sore afterwards, kicking lots of field goals and things like that. So I like something more like that, like you said, 21-16, 23-16, something like that, where the kickers are busy in the ball game. Sounds about right to me. So, and of course, the over-under is like 41, so bet the under on this game is what I would say if you were so inclined. So that's how I look at the game. I obviously want the Bears to win this game. We need to win this game. We need it more than you guys do at this point in time, but you know, I won't be surprised. I'll just be thrilled if we win on Sunday.
Yep. Yeah, and I will simply add that the Packers do have a chance to clinch a playoff spot this week. If Green Bay wins and the Rams lose, I think that's the pathway to locking in a spot. So there's some motivation added there, I think. But yeah, certainly it's not the season on the line in this one. So but no, I tend to agree. I think the Packers find a way to win, probably ugly again, but you know, it's going to be maybe it's a turnover in the fourth quarter, or maybe it's one long drive you know, late in the game that the Packers eat up a bunch of clock or something on the ground and finish off a victory. But I think that's kind of how it comes down.
Okay. One last question before I let you go. How are you guys with tackling? Because that was something that absolutely killed the Cowboys last Thursday. Was the Bears had yards after catch, yards after contact for Montgomery, and Anthony Miller is doing things like catching. Like, there's that play that Cordarrelle Patterson made in the fourth quarter where we scored our last touchdown. It was third and nine. He catches the ball about 4 yards. Like, Mitch had to get rid of the football. He dumps it off to Cordarrelle Patterson. He makes one move to the inside and shakes three guys and gains 30 yards. You know, the Cowboys were terrible in tackling. Like, Mitch's touchdown run, somebody should have hit him before he made it to the end zone. Nobody did, kind of thing. How are you guys with your tackling? Because if you tackle like the Cowboys do, it's going to be a long day for you guys.
Yeah, for sure. I think probably inconsistent is the best descriptor. There have been games when they've looked really solid, and there have been games when they have looked really ugly.
Sure.
And so I'm going to see if I can pull up broken tackle rates here right now. It looks like the Packers, at least according to Football Outsiders, are kind of right in the middle of the pack in terms of you know, number of plays that they miss a tackle on defense. So yeah, they're okay, but there's some weaknesses there, especially if you attack certain players. But
sure.
if you're running into the middle, I would say that the defensive front generally is pretty solid in that area. It's getting to the secondary, getting outside the front four plus Blake Martinez. If you can avoid those guys, you get a shot at making some big plays happen after contact and after the catch.
All right. Keep that in mind. Looking forward to the game on Sunday. Glad it's a Sunday at noon kickoff. Is one thing I hate about the Bears coming off a successful season is, you know, 3 o'clock starts, a bunch of national TV games, a lot of 7 o'clock back-to-back Thursday games for Thanksgiving and Thursday night football. It's just like, just give me the Bears at noon on Sunday, for Christ's sake. That's all I want.
And I read that this is the first time that the Packers and Bears are playing at Lambeau at noon since 2008.
I believe it. Because how many times have we started the year in Lambeau, for Christ's sake?
Yep.
Or the
Sunday
Thursday
night games,
the Thursday night games, all night games in Lambeau. Yeah, so yeah, for sure. This is definitely going to be weird to see sunlight in Lambeau Field on Sunday. That's going to be weird to see the Bears and Packers at noon on a Sunday in Lambeau. So looking forward to it. Evan, always a blast, man. Where can we find you online?
Yeah, you can find me at Tex Western on Twitter. You can find the blog. It's at Acme Packing Co. on Twitter, or acmepackingcompany.com, all spelled out. So please come check us out. And thanks, as always, for having me. I always look forward to it. So it's always a good time.
Yes, and I say this over and over again. Despite your allegiance, you're always one of my favorite guests, so I look forward to having you on to talk about the most storied rivalry in our game. So thanks again for coming back, man.
Game number 200, too.
Is that right? I'll be damned.
Yep.
200.
Yeah, so,
we're still behind in the series, though. We need to win like 3 or 4 in a row to finally knot it back up again after we let you guys have the lead. So
Yep, took it back. So let's,
only took 98 years, but we got it back.
That's right.
So,
all right.
All right. Thanks so much,
thanks
Evan.
Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Take care. All right. As always, want to thank our good friend Evan Western from Acme Packing Company from SB Nation for coming on the show, helping us preview week 15 between the Bears and the Packers. Looking forward to this game on Sunday, guys. I really am, because I'm interested. You know, I'm curious to know if we can meet the challenge. That was one of those things that was so great about the team in 2018, was that when you had that thought in your head, can they step up? Can they answer the call? Pretty much every time, the answer was yes. I mean, even in our loss to the Patriots, like, can we even hang with the Patriots? The last, like, 3-4 games against the Patriots, even in 2010, the last playoff team that we had, were utter embarrassments. We were shown the gap between us and them. Last year, not so much. We were a couple of special teams mistakes away from being able to win that football game. And, you know, the not playing so well on national TV, we beat up the Vikings on Sunday Night Football. We beat up the Rams on Sunday Night Football and basically opened the book for the Rams to be figured out. I mean, the way that Fangio set up the defense against the Rams last year was brilliant and was the blueprint for teams going forward to be able to stop them, most namely Belichick and the Patriots in the Super Bowl last year. I mean, it's just like every time the Bears needed to step up, every time the Bears needed to get a win, they were able to do it last year. And that's been the one thing that's been kind of a failure this season, is that we haven't been able to do it. And those chances earlier in the season where we had to either stay above 500 or get back to 500, we kept falling short. And now here we are. We were at 500 against a decent football team, decent, I guess, and the Cowboys, and we were able to do it. National TV, Trubisky plays his best game of the season. The offense looks as sharp as it ever has, and we get that win against the Cowboys, keeping our playoff hopes alive, making this a legitimate contest on Sunday. You heard Evan Western himself. I asked him, I was like, you don't have to spare my feelings. In 2019, we as Bear fans, we have heard it all. Everything from Mitch being a bum to, you know, we should trade this guy, trade deadlines, go and get Cam Newton, mortgage the future to get somebody who isn't Trubisky under center. And now all the positive things that have come the last few weeks as he's been playing better. And you heard it. Nobody that's realistic about what's going to happen on Sunday is looking at this as a gimme game. Nobody's looking at this as something that they shouldn't be wary of. I mean, I know they're not going to miss any sleep going into this game on Sunday, but they know the Bears have to be taken seriously, especially with the way that they've played the last few weeks and last week against the Cowboys especially. So I'm very interested and curious as a fan and as a football fan in general to see how the Bears will step up and answer this on Sunday. We talked to Evan, and we know what the Bears need to do. Basically trying to get them rattled early. Sounds like that would be the best ploy for the Bears. I mean, the last couple of weeks, we've taken our opening drive in for touchdowns and or are done well, you know, off, well, not so much against the Lions, but the offense looked sharp early against the Cowboys last week is what I meant to say. Even though we had that interception on our first drive, we drove the field. It was like a 50-yard drive before Mitch threw the interception, and then we came back on the following drive and put that one in the end zone. So the offense has been getting off to decent starts, you know, this week. And actually, we did score a touchdown on the first drive against Detroit, didn't we? We sure did. Anyway, it's late, actually. I should probably be getting to bed. But nonetheless, you know, for us to be able to do that, for the defense to, you know, maybe get after Rodgers. I mean, basically, as far as the defense is, like, if you can even closely replicate what we did against Green Bay week one, that would be ideal. It really would. So go out there, cause as much ruckus and panic and dread for Rodgers and company as you can. Focus on Aaron Jones. He may be the key to winning or losing this football game. I feel like if he has a decent afternoon against the Bears, we most likely lose it. So, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, even when we held him to 5 sacks and, you know, 10 points, he was able to make enough plays to help us, to help them win, I should say, week one. So, I mean, he's going to make his plays. It's a matter of minimizing that and minimizing those plays' impact in the outcome of the football game. That's what I think is most paramount. And if we could also kind of generate a turnover or two, maybe not so much an Aaron Rodgers interception, but maybe we get Aaron Jones or someone else to cough up the football, that would be great as well. Keep the football in our offense's hands as much as humanly possible. I mean, that was something that helped us dominate the Dallas game for the most part, was we had the football the majority of the first half, the majority of the second quarter, especially. And, you know, it was a big key in helping us win that football game was keeping that Dallas offense off of the field. And the defense did a great job that when they were on the field, they were able to bottle them up for the first 3.5 quarters of the game, or, you know, that first drive of the game aside, of course. But, you know, it's one of those situations where we just have to minimize mistakes, period. We have to minimize the mistakes with, you know, the penalties probably more so than the turnovers, because the Bears are actually pretty good at protecting the football. Even though we somehow managed to lose the turnover battle last week against the Cowboys, that did not factor in to the ball game like it usually does. The Bears were, for pretty much, for the most part, dominant in every other aspect of the game. And like Evan said, looking at the stat sheet, you wouldn't think the Bears had won the game because Dallas racked up all those yards at the end. They won the turnover battle and so on. But anyone who actually watched the game with their eyes knows for a fact that 31-24 does not tell the story of how that game actually went and how dominant the Bears' performance over the Cowboys was. And so keeping the mistakes to a minimum would be as paramount as it could be going into this game, because you heard Evan himself say that one of the big differences between last year and this year is that the defense is creating turnovers, getting the ball back into Aaron Rodgers' hands, because yards-wise, they're not as impressive as you would think an Aaron Rodgers-led offense would be. Their yards per game, their points per game are in the middle of the road, 13, 4. I mean, yardage-wise, they're in the 20s. They're not really piling up the yards on offense. So Rodgers not having 300, 400-yard games and everything. So they're not exactly, you know, just running the ball all over the place. They're having to pick their spots, and that's kind of, I guess, why another reason why Packer fans are a little nervous coming into this game is because they know the Bears can play defense, and the last few weeks we've figured out how to play offense, even though it's been against the Lions and the Giants and, you know, the struggling Cowboys. We put up 30-plus on the Cowboys. We put up 24 on the Lions. These were plateaus that were difficult for the Bears to get to earlier in the season. I mean, if we could have scored 24 points a couple of more times this season, we'd be in a much more solid playoff spot than we're in right now, that's for sure. I mean, if we'd have been able to finish drives against the Chargers like we did against the Cowboys, we're at least one game better on the schedule, which puts us in a much more advantageous position in this playoff race in the NFC. So, you know, that's where we have to be. We have to be the better team on Sunday. I mean, I know that sounds obvious, but that's pretty much how it is. We were the better team on the field week one on one side of the ball, and then we were not on the other side of the ball. And you know, it was almost embarrassing the way that we operated on offense in that game. And looking forward to seeing us avenge that performance this Sunday at Lambeau against the Bears. So, yeah, like I said, I'm really, really curious to see how we're going to play this game on Sunday. And thank you, Joe Gomez, I believe, was the one that left the comments about the Bears not playing well after the bye. Thank you for reminding me of my own comment there, kind of hanging that cloud over my head. I appreciate it. Hopefully we just play against type on that one and come out and dominate and kick ass and do everything that we need to do in order to win the game on Sunday and keep those ever so slim playoff hopes alive. So that would be fantastic to improve to 8-6 with the Chiefs and the Vikings left on the schedule. So anyway, that will do it for the Week 15 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. Come back on Tuesday when the all-important review show will be released. Will we be talking about a victory episode? We still have life. We beat the Packers in Lambeau and so on and so forth. Or will it be we lost and the season's pretty much over with and we lost another conference game and blah, blah, blah. Tiebreakers are screwed You know, but mathematically, we're not done yet. So, yeah, I would rather it be the former instead of the latter. Want to be talking about a victory and how we shut down Rodgers and managed to beat the Packers in Lambeau. Wouldn't that be a nice little early Christmas present from our beloved going into the holiday season here? So, anyway, come back on Tuesday when we'll have that episode ready to go for you. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been the Bears Talk Underground.